Welcome to the REI Mastermind Network, where host Jack Haas gathers amazing stories from leaders in real estate investing. In each episode, our guests will tell you what they're doing that works, what they've tried that failed, and best of all, you'll learn actionable steps to take your real estate investing to the next level. Now, here's Jack with another value-packed episode.
Dan Habercast joins with me again. And if you want to learn about what we were talking about previously, it was episode 272, quite a few years ago, where Dan and I were chatting about house hacking and new construction. He did all of this before the age of 25, which was pretty shocking at the time. But you got to be closing in on 30 now, aren't you, Dan?
I turned 28 in a couple months, so getting there.
28. So since then, you're kind of venturing into, well, similar territory, but a bit of more focused when it comes to land investing. So we're going to be talking all the ins and outs of that and what he's been doing there. If you want to learn more about what his team is up to, head over to danhabercast.com, and that's going to be a clickable link in the show notes. But Dan, really appreciate your time here today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Jack. It'll be fun to catch up after nearly 3 years.
Yeah, let's just dive into that. You know, your primary focus, or this conversation, is going to be focused around land investing. How did you find your way to that?
Sure. So it goes back to when I moved to Colorado 6 years ago. I had bought a couple rental properties via house hacking, which we talked about in the prior episode. And I quickly realized that the low and no money down stuff for actual buy and hold real estate is not, you need money, right? Things are going to go wrong. I've gotten seller financing. I've gotten 100% seller financing on some of my rentals. Things are going to go wrong. You're going to need liquid cash one way or another. And so that was around the time I thought, okay, how do I start some kind of active business to scale my income so I can buy more and more real estate? And so that's where Front Range Land came from, which is the same company as the last time we spoke. I've scaled it to some degree. And really simply, it's a giant marketing funnel going direct to seller to buy land anywhere from 30 to 70 cents on the dollar. And then a lot of it is just simple wholesale to retail. We buy it, close on it, list it on the MLS, and sell it at full price. And then a few at a time, I'll put new construction on. And so that's the mechanism for scaling my income, the active business that has allowed me to continually buy more and more buy and hold rental properties.
Can you talk a little bit? You said you're buying these 30 to 70 cents on the dollar. How are you marketing to these, and are you focused on a particular territory?
So I have about 10,000 mailers going out every month, and then some very targeted cold calling in areas that are really producing to types of land that are really, really in demand. And for that business, it's focused mostly on the Southeast. So Florida, the Carolinas, and then I've continually done some business here in Colorado. And I think last time we spoke, I'd only done Colorado. All the new construction's been here locally in Colorado as well. But right now, Florida and the Carolinas are, I mean, it's the same as 2021 or 2020, where it's just incredibly hot. So that's been really productive for us this year.
Well, talk a little bit about the exit then. You get these properties under contract, you close mm-hmm. with your own money, or how does that look?
So yeah, mostly my own money. I have lines of credit. I have a number of investors, but yeah, so it's a mix.
So then once you get the property under control and you sell it yourself, are you sell them on the MLS? Do you carry notes? What does that piece look like?
Mostly just cash transactions, because again, the purpose for me of Front Range Land is to generate the cash to go buy more rental properties. So I've sold maybe a dozen or two on terms, but most of the time it's just cash sale.
So when you buy rental properties, are you buying single family homes, multifamily? What are you looking for?
So I close on a fourplex next Monday. I have some duplexes being built that I'm just going to keep. So right now I've stayed in that small multifamily for a number of reasons, but it's hard to go wrong with 30-year loans. And also, my thought process around buy and hold real estate has changed a lot. And this is just a matter of opinion, a matter of where I like to spend my time. But I don't want to buy any real estate that's older than me, and I don't want to buy anything that's, you know, it's got to be B plus or better. If I can't put tenants in there with 700 plus credit scores, I don't want it. And so I enjoy building my active business. So I'd rather put my time and effort into that and scaling that, because that's a much bigger lever than going and buying, you know, C multifamily and dealing with that headache. Granted, you can make huge amounts of money doing that. I have friends that do. That's just not what I want to do.
So the mailings that you're sending out today, are they blind offers? Are you just testing the waters? What type of marketing do you send out to these landowners?
So for years, it's been all neutral. Now, again, I think last time we spoke, I was sending blind offers, but I stopped doing that a while ago. So it's mostly 6x9 bright postcards. I am, ironically, experimenting. There's one specific market we're in that there's a certain type of land that's highly in demand, where when we get these things, they sell within 24 to 48 hours every time. And they've gone up dramatically in price. So I'm experimenting on those specifically with some land offer letters, because we can pay, and I'm not exaggerating, 10 times what a lot of these people bought these lots for and still make a great profit, because they bought them at absolutely nothing. They've gone up so much.
So when you say neutral messaging, can you kind of give us an example of what type of messaging you're doing then?
Absolutely. I just did a whole talk on this at my real estate group here in Colorado Springs. If you want to start any business, you have to know, well, who's your client? What's your avatar, is the word often used in the industry. And you need to build that person out and then align your marketing accordingly. And this is so often done wrong in land. People come from housing, right? Trying to wholesale single family housing, and they apply the same assumptions to land, which are not the case, right? I would say 90 to 95% of the deals we get have nothing to do with the stress. And so our postcard is very intentionally aligned with the motivations and the things that are important, the fears of our seller, and it tends to be legitimacy at the top of the list. So the postcard emphasizes we send proof of funds. We use a local title company to handle escrow. I'm pulling from memory here, but everything is about legitimacy. Nobody we'll pay you cash in 30 days. What else are you going to pay with? It's land. That's not like most of the messaging that people are using is totally missing the avatar. Or quick close. These people don't care the vast majority of the time. Again, there's a small percent where you'll find distress, but landowners that bought 10, 20 years ago and were able to buy for cash land, something they didn't need that long ago, tend to be in a pretty strong financial position now. And so usually they're just sick. And I'm speaking more to the Southeast where it's ultra competitive, which I like. They're sick of getting cold calls and texts and mailers from people who don't have money, who don't know anything about land, and who can't close. And so the biggest reason that we consistently get deals is we actually have money. We can close. We can talk about building and refer them to, hey, here's our website. Here's our title agent who can confirm we have closed on, probably 100 plus with that title agent now. And so building legitimacy in these people's minds is at the top of the list. And our postcards are very aligned with that. And then the messaging is consistent throughout, from the website. We've got a Better Business Bureau logo on the postcards. And then they can go online and find the Better Business Bureau for Front Range land, you know? And so that has been really powerful. And then, you know, going back to the land offer letters that I am sending right now, we put on there, because we know these lots very, very well, we'll put up 5,000 non-refundable. And so that has also gotten us a lot of deals. We'll tell sellers, oh, you got another offer? Well, did they send you proof of funds? And how much non-refundable earnest money are they putting up? Gets us deals all day long.
So this is a very different strategy than I've seen a lot of people, whether it's wholesalers or what have you, focusing on the credibility. Is mm-hmm. this an avenue that you found your way when it came to marketing, or how did this come about, this strategy?
Yeah, with land, it has been just talking to thousands of sellers over the last almost 6 years. I don't do that anymore. I have acquisition managers, which again, I think is a change since last time we spoke. But of course, I see the notes in our CRM and I'm coaching them and listening to their calls and communicating with them constantly. And so I did probably the first 40-ish deals myself. And then I started hiring people shortly after our last conversation, or around the time we last spoke. And so just having talked to so many sellers, it's become really clear what their motivation is. And again, you know, if you go find the tax lien list, okay, that one might be distressed, although it's still not a lot of times. It's just people who don't care about the lot anymore. But Yeah, I'd say it's like 90-95% of the time the avatar I'm describing.
So you mentioned scaling a couple times here now. I'd be curious regarding that. Let's start with the acquisition managers. What made you decide it was time? And what type of mental hurdles did you have to go through to see that as a investment in itself versus an expense?
It was challenging for sure. And I'm glad I had done dozens and dozens of deals totally myself. I think that's important so you understand the whole process. You know what sort of conversations you're going to be having and what the sellers are like. So I would not be an advocate of, you know, hire someone day one, and especially that role, because in this business, the only points of skill really that aren't just administrative are the negotiations and some on the front end data side of things, but mostly just the negotiations. That is the main lifeblood of the business. And so don't offload that to start. Now, it was right. Yeah, it was right around when we last spoke. I had done, I don't know, 35, 40 deals. And it was actually the prompting of a friend in the same business who was far more experienced, who said, hey, it's time. I he'd been hearing me say over and over again, oh, I think I should hire someone. But I was nervous. And so that was the biggest thing that prompted me to go do it, is on the advice of someone that I respected. So to your point, you just have to do it even though you're uncomfortable, because I definitely was. You know, do I have enough leads for this person? Are my SOPs built out enough? All of those things were on my mind, but I have found with everything I have done successfully, you don't have all the answers when you start. You know, I mentioned the land capital company that I recently launched with a partner. It was the same with that. It's the same with everything. You're never going to have 10 out of 10 boxes checked before you start something new. You're always going to be uncomfortable, and you just have to learn to deal with it and do it anyways.
So did you start with the acquisition manager role?
I did, which in hindsight was probably a poor decision.
Why do you say that?
Because kind of like I was saying a moment ago, it's the most important thing, right? Most of the other work is just simple administrative work. The acquisitions, that's everything. With what I'm doing, you have to get deals or you don't make money. And so being that that's so important, the highest dollar per hour sort of task, I probably should have done that a bit longer and offloaded some of the other stuff first, but oh well.
Where would you have started knowing what you know now?
Transaction coordination, data pulling, that side of things, just the really simple, monotonous tasks like that.
So with all that being said, what type of questions have you been asking these individuals to ensure that they're a good fit?
Oh, yeah. So over time, we've found there's buzzwords that when you hear it, it's like light bulb goes off. Oh, this is our avatar. And asking the right questions gets us there. And so a lot of times, just some form of a takeaway, right? If they seem at all confrontational, or they're, oh, yeah, I want some outrageous price, or I have all these offers. Well, Jack, why don't you just go list it on the market with the realtor and get the highest price? That's one of my favorites. Number one, it shifts the power dynamic of the conversation a little bit, because we're very gently saying, we don't need your lot. And then it gets them coming back to us. And then number two, their reaction to that often gives you a good idea of what is really on their mind. Sometimes they'll just say, you know what? Yeah, I think I will. Do you have any referrals? Great. We can give a referral to our realtor. He or she'll be thrilled. We can move on. But a lot of times you can't see their face, of course, because it's a phone call, but you can hear just what can you offer? Or some excuse, but you hear it in just the frustration where that's a pain point for them and they don't want to do it. They don't want to deal with it. And that's a good indication that there probably are seller avatars. So that's one of my favorites. What did you intend to do with the lot is another one. And this is useful where, let's say they're saying, oh, I'm not sure. Maybe I want to sell, blah, blah, blah. And what I'm sitting there, or the acquisition person is sitting there thinking, is, well, come on, you've owned this for 10 years, 20 years. You've never moved here and built on it, because usually they live out of state. You're never going to use this. You're going to pass away. Your kids are going to have to take it through probate. It's going to be a pain in the butt for everyone. But you can't say that to them. So you've got to ask good questions to get them to acknowledge that on their own. And so, Jack, were you planning to build a house here and move here? What was the intent initially? Is a great question. That's been really productive in getting them to think through what I just said without saying it.
Yeah, that's awesome feedback. In fact, that's one of the The real estate or why you're not listing it yourself question is one of the first things that I actually use, but for single family homes.
Sure.
Because more times than not, that's when you get more information than anything else.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So just to remind everybody, look for more information about Dan's team by going to danhabercost.com. Like I mentioned, that's going to be a clickable link in the show notes. If you found some value in what we're talking about so far, do us a quick favor and share this with one of your investor friends. And if you're watching this on YouTube, do us a quick favor and give us a thumbs up and subscribe to the channel. So, Dan, this has been a great conversation so far. And now I need you to help people on the scaling side of things. You're hiring your first acquisition manager. What type of questions should you be asking them to make sure that they can deliver?
Sure. So full disclosure, this is something I have struggled with. I think I'm getting better. The two I have right now are producing. Things seem to be going well, but I've struggled here. This has not been easy. I've had to let go a number of people, and so working to get better. And for me, I do like personality tests, and this more is on the advice of a friend of mine who owns a very labor-intensive business where he has over 100 employees, and so he lets me use his. It's called the Culture Index, and that has been really valuable recently where right off the bat, that gives me an idea whether this person is naturally at all a salesperson or if they're going to be miserable in the role. Because especially the way that my business is set up, there's not a centralized office. We're all working remotely. You got to be autonomous. You can't require a manager standing over your shoulder. So that's somewhat inherent or not. And that test has been useful there. Beyond that, I asked them, well, what's a job or a role within a job or a time where you've been happy, you've enjoyed your work, and you felt, what's the word, satisfied? I guess there's a better word. I can't think of it. You know, content with what you're doing. Tell me about that. I'll see what they say. I'll ask them what their ideal role looks like, where they want to be in several years. We'll talk about things. I'll ask them what their weaknesses are. And that one's important because they need to be able to acknowledge, right? You know, we all have weaknesses. If they can't give you an answer there, that's a problem. And then, of course, just the experience. I mean, if they have no sales experience, I don't think they need real estate experience. Land is really simple. I have a really thorough SOP sheet of that walks through the whole business, everything involved. So I'm not as worried about that, but they've got to enjoy talking to people, be good at it, and have sales experience. And one more thing I'll say right there is I made the mistake of hiring people too similar to myself at first. And it's funny, the best acquisition or one of the best acquisition managers I've ever had, I would look at his calls in CallRail and they'd be 20, 30, 40 minutes long. And I am a little impatient. You know, I live in Colorado, but I'm originally from Ohio. And I communicate very naturally with people from New York or Boston. Like the very to the point, direct, quick communication is how I naturally communicate. And that doesn't work when you're talking to sellers in the Southeast. And so enjoying talking to people and being patient and being able to shut up and really build rapport is absolutely essential because that gets us deals all the time. So I got off on a little bit of a tangent there, but all that to say, be careful about, we all tend to get along with people that are like ourselves. And so be careful about just hiring yourself for your business because that can certainly lead to turnover.
That's some really interesting feedback on that. So with all of this being said now, especially since we talked a number of years ago, what is one of the biggest mistakes you made in your business and what did you learn from it?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that. So the biggest thing for me, and we all come from different backgrounds, but for me, scarcity was a big problem for a long time and a fear around money and spending money. And so this is cliche, but it's true. You need to know the difference between spending and investing money. I should have spent far more on marketing. You know, 3 years ago when we talked, business was great. The markets I was in at the time were producing like crazy, and I was still really stingy around marketing dollars. And that definitely held me back and stopped me from making progress. And so I think that's probably the biggest mistake that's set me back.
Hmm. So can you give us an example of one of your biggest wins you've had over the past few years?
Sure. An easy one. Late last year, we got a lot under contract at 45, closed it and I think 46,200 was the total basis because, you know, closing costs, we paid title insurance. And this was in Miami County, not in the city, in the county. And this one was challenging. We'd been working this lead for 9 months, and our realtor, we talked to him, and he goes, high demand out there, but it's a really specific type of zoning and usage, and there's no comps. And he goes, well, it might sell it at 60. It might sell way higher. I'm not sure. So we threw it up on the MLS. He gave us this will at bare minimum sell at 60. I'm positive of that. We threw it up on the MLS at 125 or 129. 24 hours later, had an offer at 13,500 with 10,000 non-refundable earnest. So that was a good one. It's like 80 grand after closing costs on that one. So yeah, let me make one point. So many of our best deals have come 6, 9, 12 months later. This is something else that, to your question about mistakes, I want to emphasize, where we don't discard leads unless they're hostile, like telling us to F off, they're not interested, or they sell or list. And so many of our leads come after 50, 60 follow-ups, or our deals, I mean. So a lot of people don't realize the extent of follow-up necessary to get deals, because it's just like any sort of business where the marketing is a matter of being ever present in the seller's mind until they're ready to sell. And so that deal I just described was an example of that.
Yeah, that's really important, especially we have found that, you know, if somebody is a bit older, they might save our postcard. Yeah. And when the unfortunate happens, a family member might run into that postcard when they're cleaning out the house or doing what have you. And it's at that point is when we'll still get phone calls of things that we mailed out years ago.
Mm-hmm. All the time. Yep.
Yeah. So this is a fantastic conversation, Dan. I just remind everybody one more time, danhabercost.com. And the company is Front Range Land. If they go to your URL, Dan, what would they find there?
Background on me, ways to get in contact with me, a page on, or that allows you to submit deals if you need capital for your land deal. So my newest venture, and this one I have a partner on, is Ground Up Partners, where we bring the capital for these short-term land deals. We'll close it with you. We'll joint venture. We'll resell it. So capital is the number one issue everyone I know in the land space has, even people operating at a really high level. And so we're working to solve that via Ground Up Partners.
Do you provide any kind of feedback or a little direction for those people that might be new to the game?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we're a second set of eyes. There's one we're closing in Florida where we insisted on getting a survey because the person that brought us the deal didn't realize there might be some encroachment issues. And so that's just an example. But yes, absolutely.
Sure. So how does those joint ventures typically work?
It depends. So many times for someone that's new, we'll bring the capital, you know, everything we pay for. If there's surveys, perk tests, we pay for that too. And we just split it upon resale. But we focus on buildable land. We don't want the desert squares that you can't actually build on or anything like that. So focusing on land that can ultimately be utilized for a real purpose and that has verifiable comps. People often ask our criteria. At the end of the day, verifiable comps are the biggest thing. So we'll go after recreational land, but not if there's no comp.
Well, that kind of brings me to a good question then. If somebody did have a land deal that they'd like some help with, what type of information should they come with to make sure that you're armed with everything you would need?
So comps, of course, but then all of the details, the due diligence details that have to do with the buildability of the land. So water, power, sewer, are they all there? If not, has a perk test been done? That's one of the biggest. What's the topography like? Is there flood zone, wetlands? Did you just comp it or did you have a realtor comp it? Because it's crazy, Jack. I've done business in a lot of markets all over the country, and the difference in norms from place to place varies dramatically. And so if you go somewhere new and you take your assumptions from your market to that market, you can get yourself in trouble. Let me give you a couple examples. I was looking at a deal in Oklahoma the other day, and I do a lot of business in North Carolina. And in North Carolina, in the markets I'm in, for all intents and purposes, I know there's a caveat here, but it's not relevant. The land is worthless if it doesn't perk, right? In Oklahoma, I'm looking at a lot that somebody submitted, and it said it failed a perk test. I go, what do you do? Why would you even submit this? And he gets me on the phone with the realtor. The realtor goes, oh, no, the health codes are different here. You can do such and such system. I forget what it was called. It's a little bit more expensive, but no one really cares. Totally different. And so if I was coming from Oklahoma with that assumption and I go to North Carolina or South Carolina, I could go buy a worthless piece of land. In the Carolinas, every single deal I do on their North Carolina, I'm forgetting now if it's South Carolina too, but North Carolina, on their standard land contract, there's a line for the due diligence fee. And that is non-refundable earnest that every buyer, retail or not, puts up to put anything under contract. So unless the seller is desperate, even if you're a retail buyer, you are putting up non-refundable earnest money that you mail directly to the seller. That's not going to fly in most places. You're not going to get a retail buyer to do that that's represented by a realtor, but that's normal there. And so I'm ranting a little bit, but at this point it's really important that the norms vary all over the country. And so if you're submitting us a deal or looking at a deal yourself, you got to talk to the locals if you don't already know the market. And the question I like to ask is, Jack, I've not done business here before, done a lot of deals, but man, things vary from place to place. Is there anything about this area specifically, about your market specifically, that there's something I might not know that would make the land worthless or non-buildable or anything like that that could trip me up? And then see what they say. That's really, really important.
That's a very good tip. So with all of that, Dan, I will transition into the rapid fire questions. But this has been a great conversation. I appreciate your time here today. But what were you going to say? You're going to say something?
Yeah. Can we go back real quick to the follow-up point? And I want to make a point on the marketing side of that too, because I was talking more about once you have a lead, you know, following up via calling, emailing. So in the markets that are producing for us, and this has become more and more apparent to me over time how important this is, we're hitting them every 3 months with mail. And we'll switch up the type of mail, but then we're also cold calling them. And for the really prime lots, we're working on creating this is actually on my calendar for this week. One of the big picture items is creating a better SOP where, like, for example, lots like that Miami one that are really in demand, we take every owner, we mail them, okay, and then we skip trace them. But of course, some leads you don't get the number for. And so we're going to find a way. I'm trying to get TLO where we can get a number for every single person. And then for the return mail, right, we'll make sure we take that and skip trace those so that we can work to get in contact and get a yes or no out of every single owner, or at least be on their radar and keep them in our long-term follow-up for those really prime in-demand lots. And I think this is where a lot of people go wrong. They'll send a marketing campaign to South Carolina and one to Georgia and one to North Carolina one time. And oh, I didn't get any deals there. Well, you only mailed them once. If it's a prime area, land is, you know, getting sold, you got to pick a few places and stick with them. Now, in addition to the prime markets that are producing for us, we're always testing new places and trying to stay ahead of the curve. But we are repeatedly mailing to the places that produce. Like the first market I ever did business in, Pueblo, West Colorado, I think I mailed there consistently for 4 years. And year four, I was still getting deals because you never know at what point somebody's going to be really willing to sell. So that's another thing that I think most people don't understand. It's just the time horizon and the consistency required to really be successful.
Mm-hmm. Very valid point and very worthwhile there. I hope everybody paid attention to that. One last time, we head over to danhabercost.com. Before we switch to the rapid fire, you kind of beat me to the punch there. Is there any other questions or concepts that you wished we'd cover here today?
The only other thing I would say is the word land is such a broad category. Don't try and do everything. You know, there's the land that I go after that's entitled, that's infill, has utilities in place. But then there's a whole nother business you could build just taking raw land and getting it to that stage. And then there's the recreational land. There's endless niches, and trying to learn them all at once is challenging. So if you're new, pick something and make sure you actually know the product, the asset you're going after. Because, you know, when we send out mailers, a lot of these sellers are old developers who maybe they have a couple lots left. They built 100 houses and they have a few lots left over that they didn't build on, and they're tired and they're done. And so if you can't speak to the basics of the asset you're targeting, those people are going to write you off right away. And so that's that. I mean, that's true with any asset, but take the time to pick a niche and learn that niche, and that'll put you ahead of a lot of the competition.
No, really appreciate that feedback. So here we go. If you're ready, Dan, we'll just jump into the rapid fires.
Let's do it.
What lie do real estate investors tell themselves and sometimes to others?
Passive income. Unless it's a triple net property or you're putting money into somebody else's syndication or something like that, it's not.
What book would you recommend, or what are you reading right now?
Ooh, I could talk about this for a while. I like history and science and combinations of the two more than anything. Personally, I find those most valuable. I finished Same as Ever last year, early this year, and I actually flipped to page one and read it again. And it's all about, in the current world we're in, with technology changing so rapidly, what are the things that never change? And so much of it is just human nature. And so that book is excellent. And then right now I'm reading a book. It's The New Map, Climate, Energy, and Geopolitics, which probably isn't super useful for what we're doing, but it's just incredibly interesting. So that's a recommendation for anyone that likes that sort of thing.
Well, it sounds like you read some pretty obscure books in some regards, but do you find that you're surprised frequently of things that you can actually apply to your real estate investing?
Yeah. You really, because it's there's a lot of concepts. This is what I love about history, is there's so many concepts. And again, it tends to pertain to human nature that make anything and everything going on today, as far as things going wrong in the world, far less frightening, because, oh, this has happened before. Like, I mean, don't take me down this rabbit hole, but what's happening to our currency right now? Inflation. Wow, that's so surprising, considering we printed, what was it, how many trillions of dollars? Anyways, so much of what happens today is exactly the same thing that's happened over and over and over again throughout the millennia. And so this all goes back to years ago. I read Charlie Munger's Poor Charlie's Almanac. And one thing he talked about a lot was he has a term for it, I'm blanking, but reading all kinds of disciplines and finding that there's crossover. And so, yes, long answer to a simple question, but absolutely, there are applicable concepts from all these books.
Yeah, I think my audience is well aware of where I stand on some of this stuff. So it's I can share a number of libertarian documents that is eye opening for people. Anyway, if you could go back in time and give your younger self one piece of advice, what would it be?
I wouldn't go to college. I'd start a business. I would just kept doing the business I was already doing. I wouldn't try to invest other than a house hack, because it is nice to get rid of your expense. But I wouldn't try and invest until I figured out how to make a significant amount of money and focus on building that one active business. Because frankly, you can make millions of dollars with land, or you could go build an accounting firm. You can't do it with all of them. So picking one active, scalable avenue and then buying nice assets is all I would have done.
What single strategy, process, or tool have you implemented that has had a direct time-saving impact to your business?
Probably Pebble, the CRM I'm using, has been really useful in that I upload all the data that I pull from PropStream or wherever I get it to Pebble, and then it's all preloaded, so then I can send mail right out of there. And then, of course, all the info's in there for my acquisition people. So that's been really, really helpful.
So, and there's kind of a bullet point on that. I don't know if you know this, Dan, but I also have Real Deal CRM that does very similar, and we'll have some integration with Deal Machine to provide similar functionality. So I really appreciate your time there, Dan. Thank you so much. And I hope you'll come back sooner next time.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I appreciate you having me, Jack. You asked great questions, and I'll come back anytime.
Have you learned at least one actionable step to incorporate into your real estate investing? If so, please consider returning some of that value by leaving a positive review, subscribing to our YouTube channel, or joining our growing network on Facebook and Twitter. You can find links to all of our social media accounts in the show notes. See you next time.